Alex, I believe I have reached the equivalent of nirvana.
Tell me more.
Well, I have been sleeping on my cozy earth sheets.
Wow.
And when I get up in the morning, I put on my fantastic jogger suit.
Yes.
Which is a funny way to put it, but you started saying that, so I'm just going to keep on going. And it is opening my mind to things I didn't know I could open my mind to.
Casey, all I have to say is, welcome to the other side.
It's incredible, Alex.
I've lived two lives. One of them is before Cozy Earth, and one is after.
Which is right now.
That's right. We're talking Cozy Earth. They make incredible, soft, lovely, temperature-controlled bedding and cozy wear.
Cozy Earth makes the best clothes I think I've ever touched, that have ever touched my skin.
Casey, I'm right there with you.
It's soft, it's breathable, it's temperature regulated, it looks good, it feels good, which makes it good.
And how about this for good? All of their products come with a 100-night sleep trial and a 10-year warranty. So if for some completely batshit reason you don't love these sheets, you can return them.
Now, Alex, right around the corner is Mother's Day. If you haven't already done something, which you should have,
yeah,
now's your moment. Go buy your mom some Cozy Earth, because it is the thing that will help her sleep at night. It's the thing that will help keep her comfortable at all moments of her life. And that's what you want for your mom.
So she isn't up all night thinking about what a disappointment her children are.
Exactly, because they didn't get her Cozy Earth. You don't want to be on that level.
Well, Casey, here's some exciting news. All Completely Arbitrary listeners get 35% off at CozyEarth.com with promo code TREES. Again, that's promo code TREES, T-R-E-E-S, for 35% off at Cozy Earth. So get yourself cozy. Get your mom cozy. Hell, get your dad cozy and your friends cozy.
Yeah, it doesn't have to stop there, you know?
Make the earth cozy with Cozy Earth.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Greetings, fungal associates. Welcome to Completely Arbitrary, the podcast about trees and other related topics. I'm one of your hosts. My name is Alex Croson. I am alongside the incredible and the incredibly handsome, if I do say so myself.
Wow.
Casey Cloud.
Get out of here. I'm just sitting over here minding my own business.
Casey,
you just hit me upside the head with a compliment like that.
Your hair is quite long.
Oh, thank you.
I've seen you with basically a bun a couple times.
Yeah, it's my new thing. My mom hates it.
Oh, well, what your mom hates, Alex loves.
Thank you. So does everybody else. I get many compliments on it.
Yeah.
Thank you. It's very kind of you to say it. Right now, I'm wearing my favorite bicycling hat, as I do, and it makes it so I can put all my hair in the back and then have it pop out. Look, it looks kind of like I got a mullet a little bit.
Yes, it is quite mullet-like.
Yeah, it feels good. Feels right.
But then when you take your cat off, it's like a romance novel illustration.
Exactly. I was going to say a Pantene Pro-V commercial. No. Herbal essence.
Yeah. Casey, we have a lot to get through this episode.
Gosh, don't we?
And let's first talk about this big old fun thing happening in our lives, which is
it rained today.
We have officially opened our merch store.
Oh, that too.
Casey,
I knew what you were going to say.
I'm stunned.
It's so the response. Holy heck, you guys.
Yeah.
We ran out of shirts
in like a day and a half.
God.
Thank you to everybody who bought anything off our store. We are just gobsmacked. We are so pleased.
It's amazing.
It's really put a fire in our bellies for more fun you know, custom merch and
it's
things.
It's true. In fact, we already have a document for a bunch of stuff coming out sometime.
That's true. We are already working on our fall line. So, but there is a dark side to the fact that we got so many orders in our first 24 hours.
Yeah, it's true.
Casey?
We have to ship those orders.
Yep.
Guess what I am feverishly learning how to do?
We are, and I say we, Casey is spearheading the shipment stuff. Ugh. Stumbling our way hardcore through learning how to ship things.
Yeah.
We thought we knew. And we basically did not.
Yeah. You know what? It's easy. You'd think it's easy to just send a letter. It's not. Especially if that letter has a t-shirt in it.
Yeah. You know how like teachers will learn all about kids and how to make curriculum. Mm-hmm. And they come out of school and they get their first teaching job and it's like a fucking war zone. This is what a teacher is. I have lots of teacher friends. Nothing that you ever learn in school can prepare you for working in a classroom with 30 children.
The actual children.
Yes. Yeah, so we were as prepared as we could be.
I thought so.
And then we got hit with a tsunami of orders, which we were so grateful for, but also wowzers. There's a lot we don't know how to do, but we're figuring it out.
So thank you for being patient. Everything is on its way, either in a metaphysical way or a literal way. And it just, we're not quite sure which one it is.
Yes, probably physical.
Probably physical.
Everything is on its way. Thank you so much for being patient. We hope it'll be worth it.
Yeah, we really do. Everyone, these are also all the things that we're doing. We should add this. I know we put it on the store, but we were looking on trying to like how we want to ship these things. And I just hate waste. I hate plastic. I hate using things that are just going to go straight to the trash can.
Yeah.
So we have like gone out of our way to try to ship things that are in 100% recycled material or recyclable material. And or both.
Yeah.
That's the scheme. The package the t-shirts come in, you can literally take that and put it in your fireplace and burn it, or throw it right back into your recycle bin, or I think you could also theoretically compost with it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, stunning. So anyway, everyone, thank you so very much.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
We're so excited. We got more things on the way. They're coming. So if you tried to get a t-shirt and you didn't get the opportunity, more will be coming in, I think by the time this comes out, a week and a half or so.
Yep, about 2 weeks or so.
Yeah, you'll have more opportunities. And keep an eye, because we're going to be constantly adding in new stuff. What a day. Thanks, everyone.
Yeah, thank you, everybody. Well, Casey, today we're talking about a fantastic tree, one that you and I both love.
I do love this tree.
Its cone is in my top five cones.
Really?
In fact, I have one sitting before me, Casey.
There it is. I see it right there.
The tree we're talking about this week is the Western Hemlock.
Oh, hemlock.
This is a non-pseudo suga. This is just a suga.
Yeah, this is a straight suga.
Straight sugan up in here.
Spelled with a T, everyone. I believe it's the Japanese term for hemlock initially.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That's what I'm told.
Casey, Latin on this guy?
Yeah. Suga, T-S-U-G-A, heterophylla.
Heterophylla.
Yes, yes.
Let's first imagine that you and I are walking through a Pacific Northwest forest.
I think we can do that.
And we come across a beautiful Western hemlock. God, yes. Are they gorgeous.
Oh, I was around a bunch of them this week.
Nice.
They're everywhere up. I was on the Olympic Peninsula. It's beautiful.
Lovely. And I say, Casey, please describe this tree to me and our listeners.
All right. So you got it right. So the reason they call it the non-uniform leafed hemlock is because it has little needle-like leaves, like what you'd expect from any kind of conifer.
Right.
Kind of standard in that regard. However, they are two-ranked, which means they come out to the left and to the right. So remember when we talked about Douglas fir, for instance?
Okay.
Where you have your little twig and it has a bunch of needles that come out spirally arranged around the entire stem or the entire little twig, right?
Right.
So it looks kind of like a bottle brush. Mm-hmm. Where if you looked straight down the thing, you would see like the twig, you would see that there are leaves and needles coming off in every direction.
Right.
In this case, if you look straight down from the very end of that twig, there would only be leaves going mostly to the left and mostly to the right. Now it's not perfect, as in like, you know, it's perfectly flat, right. But they're kind of like, it's kind of a little left and to the right.
Basically left and right.
Yeah, there's none that go upwards. There's none that go downwards.
You know, it does look a bit like a broadleaf needle.
Yeah, it is. And that's actually a fun thing about it is that if you try to spin one of those needles in cross-section,
right.
it won't roll between your fingers.
Yeah.
You're like trying to just pick it off and spin it.
It's kind of a flat needle.
Yeah, exactly.
Got a little width to it.
It does, and that's a key identifying characteristic where okay. A spruce or a Douglas fir or a pine needle, you can always spin those in your hand for the mm-hmm. most part. Pine needles, they're actually split into like either triangles, mostly triangles of some kind, but we're not going to get into the weeds on that. Essentially, they are little tiny flat needle-like leaves that have these little teeny tiny petioles, and those little teeny tiny petioles just kind of come off, and then they open up into this larger leaf. But each one of those leaves can be different sizes. Some of them are like an eighth of an inch. Some are a full inch. Some are a half inch. Some are 3/4 inch. So they have multiple different size needles that are coming out, flipping over or going, you know, left and right, left and right, left and right.
Interesting. Any science behind that?
No, I don't really know why they would do that. It might just be, honestly, yeah, I don't even know.
Okay.
That's just the way this tree
is. The way it is.
There it is.
I'm learning that this is the answer to a lot of my questions on this show. It's like, that's just the way it grows, man.
Yeah, it's pretty accurate. They just kind of do weird things.
Yeah.
And I would assume that obviously there's, you know, some genetic thing to it. All of these, you know, kinds of trees do that, meaning the Western hemlock. But they, you know, it's just maybe it could be a competition thing where, you know, the trees that didn't focus on having perfectly left-right things had genes that did something different. So
sure.
It might be a responsible thing for something else. I don't know.
Okay.
Anywho, on the bottom side of those leaves are these two lovely little lines of stomata, is what we call it.
Stomata.
Yeah. So the stomata, or the stomates, or the stomata, those are basically gas exchange pores in the bottom of the leaves. And they will, I don't know exactly what it is, but they deposit what we call bloom. And the bloom is the same kind of stuff on a blueberry. You pick a blueberry and you kind of like rub your fingers on it. There's like a little like whitish kind of layer that comes off.
Yeah,
that's bloom.
Grapes too have this.
Yes, exactly. So that is the same thing that will happen on the bottom side of these leaves. You can't rub it off though quite the same. But if you flip over many conifer leaves, you flip them over, you can see two exact lines where you see these white bloom coming on the bottom of it.
Wow.
And those are stomatal lines are what they're called.
What are they do?
They just do gas exchange. And so the leaves obviously are doing a lot of the photosynthesis, right?
Uh-huh.
So if you're doing the photosynthesis, you have to take in carbon dioxide and you have to give out oxygen.
Oh.
So you need to have pores in order to do it. They're literally doing the same kind of breathing that we're doing, except in reverse.
Can I say something?
Of course.
You say stomato, I say stomata.
Of course you'd say stomato. You are such a freak, Alex.
I've been wanting to say that for like 5 minutes.
All right. Well, I'm glad that you finally got it out there.
It was so not worth it either.
It was totally worth it. What are you talking about? I feel refreshed. I feel like, you know, now we're rolling. Now we got some jokes going. You know,
yeah.
Beforehand it was getting way too serious.
So the stomata, gas exchange.
Yep.
Okay.
That's the one. Well, these tiny little leaves, they grow off, like I said, two-ranked is the term, and they grow off left and right.
Okay.
And if you are looking at these leaves, you will see many of them are kind of flipped to the side a little bit. Like they're not all perfectly flat. So as you look at them, you can see some that are kind of flipped over and you can see a little bit of that white kind of stomata line.
Yeah.
Some are long, some are short, and they grow or they're really soft when they come out. So you can just like touch them with your hand. They are very feathery kinds of branches and twigs, and they are famously hangy. So the all the branches, all the twigs, will just kind of go and just kind of hang down. Like you put your arm out and you just let your hand kind of rest, you know, like you're not holding your hand out straight. You just kind of let it fall down.
Yeah.
They all do that.
Yeah.
The end of almost every single twig.
It's appropriate that you called them feather-like because that will come up in my Croson's homegrown trivia in a few minutes.
Oh, this is great news.
Right.
Well, the other thing about this is these hemlocks. There's a couple of really fun things about these trees. They're known to have that same droopiness on their very tippy top branch leader.
Okay.
So as they're coming out, You can tell a hemlock, and this is like a, something that people do, and they're like, oh, you can tell the hemlock because it's got that droopy top. And you can see that as their new shoots are going up, it just has this little bit that hangs over, kind of like a ponytail.
I love that.
Yeah, it's like a ponytail that is a little bit too long, so it doesn't just stick up straight. It just kind of comes off and then kind of, you know, leans over. But it's not long enough to where it like hangs way down. It's just kind of like a little short ponytail. You can just get it long enough that just the top kind of hangs over to the side. That's how I imagine it.
You know what? They were already, I already love the Western. Well, I liked the Western hemlock before today.
Sure.
But as you're describing it, I'm like, oh yeah, they're kind of like slacker, like stoner kind of types.
They kind of are. Yeah. It's like, hey, what's up? I'm Western hemlock. I'm here.
It's like, I'm a big, tall, beautiful tree, but I'm not going to like stand up straight.
Yeah. Okay. That's perfect. It's going to take its time.
Yeah. I love that.
And a lot of people think, or they have said that it's an adaptation for the tree to not get broken by, say, you know, ice or snow or something like that.
Smart.
So it's already kind of droopy. But then as the tree grows, it actually lignifies and adds structure to those really bendy twigs.
Mm-hmm.
So the trees grow straight up, straight as an arrow with one single gigantic stem.
Right.
But over time, it's kind of like they slowly just pull themselves up straight. And so each time they grow out, they straighten the bottom sections.
Wow.
Yeah, or the lower sections of that very top twig.
Interesting.
Yeah, they're adorable little trees, especially when they're very small. They, though, Alex, do not stay small for long.
Okay.
These trees get massive.
Yeah.
Let me just quickly see here if I can find some statistics to see what the biggest tree is here.
Okay.
All right. All right. Height 55 meters. Quick. Do that math. That's about 1,000 feet. I just tried to come up with a good number and I couldn't.
Is that like 170 feet?
It's about, I would say so. I mean, basically times it by three, right? Let's do this.
Yeah.
This can eat many meters to feet. All right, so for all you Americans out there, 180 feet tall. They routinely also get like 8, 9, 10, 12 feet in diameter.
Whoa.
Huge.
Man, the only ones I've seen that I know for sure that I've seen and said, hey, that's a Western hemlock,
yeah,
maybe 2 feet in diameter.
Wow.
But still a decent sized tree.
Yeah, like, still decent.
Well, Casey, let's talk my favorite thing about this tree. The cones, my man.
Oh, the cones are adorable. What do you think, Alex? You got one in your hand right now.
I've got one in my hand. It is about 3/4 of an inch tall. It is spirally arranged.
Yes, that's
around
right.
Around the axle?
Axis. Yes, well done.
Axles from a car.
Yeah, well, no, there's also an axle, like a auxiliary. Yeah, it's also a plant term to some degree. It's spelled differently, though.
The scales are sort of scale-shaped, like fish scales.
Yeah.
Curved
at the end there.
They are a bit cupped, so they look like maybe like a hyali scoop, you know, at the end of a what is that? Hyali, you know, like that the world's most dangerous game. You like throw that ball with the stick. It's like lacrosse, but
I don't think I have
100 times
what
more
you're
dangerous.
Talking about.
It fucking kills people.
Yeah, it's exactly like that then.
And they're just the most adorable little symmetrical things.
Aren't they?
They're gorgeous. They're a work of art, Casey.
They're so cute. Like, I have the Carolina hemlock tattooed on me.
Oh, yeah.
The cones look so super similar.
Yeah.
And I just love looking at it. Like, I just think they're just the most adorable little, like, skirted little scales that come out. And they're so small. And the trees just are covered with them.
Yeah.
And they are littering the ground when they fall, where you can literally be walking on a carpet of these little tiny cones they don't even hurt your feet. You can just cruise right through.
Can I make a declaration?
Of course you can.
Hemlock are my favorite family of cones.
Oh, interesting.
I love hemlock cones.
All right, good point. Good declaration.
In shape, in morphology, in size, their little size.
Yeah, they're adorable. Some of them are a little bit bigger.
Yeah,
not a lot bigger.
I like them how they are.
All right, duly noted.
Yeah.
Well, these little trees are, also, I should make a note. I meant to say this earlier. This is not in any way related to the poison hemlock.
Right.
This is something that so many people have brought up to me and are like, oh, yeah, well, you can't eat that tree. And it's like, what? Oh, yes. Okay, I see what you're saying. You're right. You cannot eat this tree, but you can make a great tea out of the new leaves. They have a lot of vitamin C in them.
More to come.
Yes, there we go. However, the hemlock, poison hemlock, is actually in the parsley family.
Yeah.
It's a species of What is it? Cicuta and conium.
Kind of grows near the water.
Yeah, exactly. It's an invasive species here. It's an herb. Like, it does not look anything like it. And that is the thing that, what, was it Aristotle took to kill himself? I think it was. Wow. Because they were like, hey, we're going to kill you, or you can just kill yourself. Jesus. So he took poison hemlock.
Christ, what a choice.
Yeah, hey, Greeks, man. Wild people.
Aristotle's choice.
Yeah, Aristotle's choice. Yeah, okay, that's going to be the next name of our podcast. People in impossible situations. But that, so this is, I don't even know why they initially did this. I feel like I read this one time, and I think they named it because it, like, the leaves kind of had a similar kind of featheriness to it.
Hmm.
That's, like, the first thing that comes to my brain, but I can't remember exactly why they named the completely different things after different things. I don't know.
Well, I feel like hemlock is kind of like the... You know that old Brian Regan joke, the crayon is getting in all the juice. It's like crayon apple, you know, mixed berry or whatever.
Yeah.
Hemlock is sort of getting in the pseudo-suga. It's like, it's not, it's like a hemlock. It's kind of like a hemlock.
Hey, that's true. That's not unreasonable.
And those are the only two examples I can think of, the hemlock plant and the pseudo-suga.
I'll round that up to a full gamut.
All right. Yeah. So now we're talking. Wow, I got a full gamut from Casey Clapp.
Yeah. Well, the last bit is that this bark is really beautiful. You can easily tell the difference between the hemlock bark and Douglas fir bark, because Douglas fir, as they get larger, they will get really big, deep furrows. They hold on to their bark a lot more. Hemlocks do not get that. Their furrows stay really shallow, and there's more of them. So the hemlock bark, like, overall looks a little bit more smooth.
Mm.
It's a little bit lighter in color, a little bit lighter brown, and is just... Like, the texture of it's a little more fine, I would argue. Just like the needles.
I think it's so refined looking.
Yeah, it really does have that.
If we're going to compare Douglas fir to hemlock...
You might as well.
Douglas fir is a little brutish to me. I love a Douglas fir.
Yeah, okay. I think that's a good term for it.
You know what I'm saying? And the hemlock is... The hemlock has some class.
It really... Yeah, it does. Yeah, it's got some class. I mean, it's a late successional tree, you know? It's a fashionably late successional tree.
It's got those soft, droopy needles.
Yeah. Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. Hemlock's here. Do you see hemlock?
Those delicate cones.
Look at those cones. It hangs off of her so beautifully.
It really struts.
Wow. Yeah. And then right behind is the Douglas fir.
Like, oh,
Douglas, hey, it's good to see you. Maybe if you just go around back, we got the beer out there.
Yeah.
Shut the door when he leaves.
Douglas is getting kicked out.
Yeah, he's getting kicked out.
Well, he's like the old gross man that, like, started it all, but you have to invite him, but you don't really want him around.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But you know what? He still comes around. And every now and then, Douglas fir will have some pretty good stories. That woodpecker in 1785.
That's right.
Woo!
He's a real Giorgio Armani type.
Yeah, he really is.
Casey, how about some homegrown trivia?
I want to hear it.
By homegrown, I mean taken from the pages of Plants of the Pacific Northwest Coast by Pojar McKinnon.
What a smashing book.
Yes, one of our favorites around these parts. So here's what I found from, and we're going to talk specifically about indigenous uses of the Western hemlock here. Now, the bark, extremely high in tannin, as opposed to other trees.
Yep.
Tannin is, of course, used in leather production for tanning.
Yes, that is where it comes from. And it's the tannins in the bark that make the tanning process.
How wild.
I love it.
The Quileute people used the bark for tanning hides, of course, among many others. The Coast Salish used the red dye from the bark to color goat wool and as cosmetic paintings.
Makeup essentially. Yeah, gotcha. Yeah.
Okay. I practiced this word before you got here.
Yeah.
The Kwakwaka'wakwa. That's it. The Kwakwaka'wakwa.
Wow.
Steeped the bark in urine to make black dye.
Yeah.
And then they also made dance clothing, like skirts and headdresses and headbands and such.
That's so good.
And
also, well done with the pronunciation. That one has a lot of W's in it.
It has a W on the end, so you're supposed to kind of give a little at the end.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Kwakwaka'wakwa.
Nice. Yeah, good work. Yeah, thanks. We're trying our best.
Yeah, I looked all these up beforehand. The New Hulk and the Chehalis and other groups use the bark to color fishnets. I found this incredibly interesting, Casey.
Yeah, why would you color fishnets?
You color these fishnets to make them more brown and darker, and they become invisible to fish.
You're kidding me.
I'm not kidding you. Isn't that,
I didn't know that.
Genius?
Yeah, how do you figure that out? I guess you just like accidentally drop a net in a bunch of stuff, and you're like, oh, shoot, well, let's use it anyway, yeah. And it works like 16 times
and
better.
And then you catch like 50 fish.
That's so stunning. I didn't know that like the change of color would affect the fish. Obviously, it seems like so clear now.
Yeah, I guess it blends in with the riverbed or yeah, how about that? And then this is what I alluded to earlier. The hemlock branches were used by the Coast Salish and the Nuchanu for collecting herring spawn. Case, have you seen this?
No, I have not.
So basically, I watched a documentary about this. A group of people in Alaska still do this.
Uh-huh.
I'm sure many others. But basically, you take branches from a hemlock.
Yeah.
Because they're so feathery, like you specified, you make a huge river width net out of them. You place it at the estuary.
Where
the river meets the ocean.
Yeah, okay.
Because of its fine feathery texture, it collects eggs.
Yeah.
You drag them up when you're all done collecting. Uh-huh. You scrape them off, and you can eat them fresh, or you can dry them.
Yeah, some fish egg, like escargot kind of stuff?
Caviar, yes.
Caviar, sorry. Escargot is snails. Whoops.
Yeah. Pretty genius.
It is. That's amazing.
And of course, medicinal purposes, many Pacific Northwest indigenous groups used the pitch from the hemlock as in poultices, rubbed it on your chest for a cold.
I can see that because it has like the I would imagine it would have similar effects because it has all the compounds in it that smell kind of like the Vicks vapor rub.
Yeah, like a menthol sort of cooling effect.
Cool.
Also, the bark is great for teas.
Yeah, that's like I said earlier. I've had it before, and it's just a very lovely. It's a tea, so it's not like a robust flavor kind of thing.
Sure. Does it taste like wood? Is it woody?
No, because you get the very early fresh tea. So in the early spring, the tips come out and they're very like bright green, very succulent, and they haven't like added in all their toughness to it yet.
Oh, okay. This is the branch tips we're talking.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I know there's also a bark tea.
Yes. Sorry. This is the branch tips. Just take each one of the new growths that are coming out, dot, pull those off, put it into a tea, and it has a lot of vitamin C in it.
That sounds delicious.
Yeah. It was very good. I think we also put in some berries into it. So we had like berries and then the hemlock and then... Oh, I want to say huckleberry, but they weren't ripe at the time, so I don't know what it was.
Okay.
Oh, well.
Sounds tasty. The Didadat people, they're hunters. So you go out hunting.
Uh-huh.
If you run out of food, these hunters are chewing on branch tips as an appetite suppressant.
Wow.
So I wonder if that tea that you made would act as an appetite suppressant.
That's possible, yeah.
And also, how do I get a hold of some?
Hey, I can take you to a couple trees.
We can literally walk outside right now.
Yeah, I think so. I think there's at least a couple late. Close by.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, that is something that I'm so stoked to hear about. This is such a, like, all the indigenous peoples of this region use all these trees to such a lovely extent where they were constantly using almost every part from every kind of tree for either a different thing or a similar thing to another kind of tree.
But yes.
Just, you know, it was, you have this resource everywhere. I mean, this list is, I mean, you just got this out of one book, you know?
Yeah, it's quite a stark contrast against, European colonizing people who were all about the waste.
Yeah, we're going to make wood and bark dust.
Right.
It's like, well, what about all these other things?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's something else, Case. I'm going to try to do more of this, more indigenous uses of these plants, because as I discovered today, this book, Plants of the Pacific Northwest Coast by Poe Jar McKinnon, is just cram jam full of indigenous uses.
It totally is.
Of
That's
all these things.
Half the reason I love it so much is that you realize every single thing has a connection and a purpose that you could add to it from a completely different perspective that honestly has been lost for a significant amount of plants and animals around here.
Yeah.
It's a tragedy. So I'm happy that it has been written down and that we are still remembering that people still use these trees for other than just looking at and for other uses than just lumber, because it grows in our forest, and of course we're going to cut it down if it does.
That's right. Well, Casey, on that somber note, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with more Completely Arbitrary. Casey, you know our future is bright.
Yeah, it is, Alex.
but it's so bright, we gotta wear shades.
What?
Casey and I are now putting on our gooder glasses.
Oh, man. I can't see a damn thing.
Hey, they do the job, huh?
These things are great.
Casey, that's right. This episode is brought to you by Gooder.
That sure is right.
That is G-O-O-D-R. They make fashionable sunnies.
They make fantastic sunglasses. Alex, I got a quick story. When they approached us, I said, I cannot tell you how excited I am about this. They saved me when I was riding my bike across Iowa in Ragbri last July.
Wow.
I couldn't see. I got hit in the eye. So one of my eyes from a week prior would not constrict. It was constantly dilated.
Oh my God.
So I had to wait till it like essentially refixed itself. I ended up needing to wear sunglasses on the entire drive and driving back over, but I had cheap gas station sunglasses.
Yeah.
It was $5 or something.
Yeah.
And they just did not do the job. I was absolutely in hell. And then stopped over at a shop that was there and then picked up a pair of sunglasses and it said it was $25. And I was like, what? These are okay. I'll try them out. I just need a new pair.
Yeah.
All polarized. I put them on my face and it was like the world had changed.
Oh.
I'm pretty sure I cried, Alex.
Casey,
like, I love these sunglasses.
I had no idea.
Oh, yeah. They saved me.
That's amazing, Casey. And they didn't save me yet.
The time will come.
The day will come when I need these glasses and I have them. I do love these sunglasses, Casey. And I was telling you before we started recording, my problem with sunglasses is that I always either buy, like you said, a cheap gas station pair for $6, or I could debase myself by spending $200 on a pair of sunglasses at Nordstrom or some shit. I ain't doing that. Casey, Gooder are the perfect middle ground.
They sure are. Starting at $25, they're all 100% polarized. You can look into water and see through it.
Oh my God.
Which is incredible.
Is that true?
It is. They're polarized. Yeah.
Oh, well, these would be great for fishing, eh?
Exactly.
And they would be great for cycling, working out, golfing, going to the beach, hiking, or just walking around town.
Just doing anything. I rode my bike across Iowa with these sunglasses. People wear them while they are jogging. They stay on your face. They don't bounce. They are excellently made. I cannot recommend Gooder enough.
And Casey, they're pretty cool. In fact, you and I got a couple pairs.
Oh yeah, what did you get?
Mine are called Hellhound Hallucinations.
Ooh, Alex. I got The Future is Void.
Amazing.
Now, for those of you who are unfamiliar, that's the name of our sunglasses.
Yes.
Not our new catchphrases for completely arbitrary.
Hey, man, you know what I say. Hellhound Hallucinations.
Yeah, he does say that.
And if you want to support this show and try a pair of Gooder, they are giving completely arbitrary listeners free shipping. You can go to gooder.com/trees. That's GOODR.com/trees. And use code trees for free shipping. Gooder offers a 30-day money-back guarantee and 100% satisfaction. Again, that's gooder.com/trees. And use code trees for free shipping. We'll see you in the future.
Which is void.
And bright.
Yeah, you look good. You look good.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary. Casey, today we're talking the Western Hemlock Suga heterophylla.
That's it. Well done.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, Casey, let's chat about this tree and what do we have on topic for today?
Well, so here's the thing. Are you familiar with the term temperate rainforest?
Yes.
Tell me what you think.
That's like the kind of forests we have here.
Yes, that's it. Well done.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how to define them necessarily, but I know it when I see it.
I guess I technically don't know either. But essentially, a rainforest is, you know, if you have to define exactly what that means, it would be a place or a forest or an ecosystem that gets X amount of water per year.
Sure.
You know, there's a certain threshold, and I don't know what it is. It's high.
Okay.
So, for instance, the eastern United States is not a rainforest, even though it's a forest completely and entirely throughout. You know, if there wasn't so much, you know, development and tree removal, almost everything from the Mississippi straight over to the East Coast, all the way up and down from, you know, I guess almost just the entire, until you get to like Maine,
yeah,
that everything going down, that's all this one big gigantic forest, essentially.
But it's drier than the threshold needed to call it a rainforest.
Yeah, exactly. They don't get as much rain as we get in our temperate rainforest regions of the Great Pacific Northwest.
Gotcha.
And that would be essentially from the redwoods around Santa Cruz, San Francisco, that area, mm-hmm. about halfway around around California, right on the coast, a little teeny tiny sliver along the coastline.
Okay.
As you go north, that sliver widens and widens and includes the Coast Range Mountains as you go through the Siskiyous, and then as you get into the Coast Range that we have here in Oregon, through Washington, and up into British Columbia on right. Vancouver Island into Southeast Alaska. That as it keeps going up north and north, it actually splits and then includes the section of the Western Cascades going all the way up until it reaches essentially the Rocky Mountains up in Canada.
So there's a big funnel shape happening to the rainforest on the West Coast.
Exactly, because as you go north, you get more rain.
I see.
As you go further west towards the coast, you also get more rain. So as you go further down, you have to go further to the west. As you go up, you can go a little bit further to the east.
Okay.
And this is essentially from the Pacific Ocean. All the water comes in off the Pacific Ocean, and it just dumps all the time. From more or less three quarters of the year, we just get rain. At least historically, climate change is happening.
Yep.
Things are changing, but essentially we get 90, or actually I did this math one time, Portland at least gets about 2/3 of its rain in the seasons, I think between November, like the 1st of November, October, actually I think it was October, from October through April,
okay.
Essentially we get most of our rain. And
sounds about right.
Yeah, right. May, we also kind of comes and goes, but then in June it starts to fade away. July and August, September, we get almost no rain generally. So in those, in our rainy season, we just get rain several times a week. It's usually not very intense, but it's enough that on those slopes where there's just nothing but trees on the west side of the Coast Range, on the west side of the Cascade Range, we just get dumped on. And this is what makes it a rainforest. It is a temperate rainforest because we don't have tropical temperatures.
Right.
And everyone thinks, oh, a rainforest, it's the tropics. It's like, eh, yes, but there's also rainforests elsewhere. So our temperate rainforests here are composed of several different tree species, one of which is the western hemlock.
Yes.
In fact, Alex, it's probably one of the biggest species. It's the state tree of Washington, the evergreen state. But what's unique about this tree, the hemlock, and also the western red cedar, but very notably the hemlock, is that it does this really funny thing that is usually a really weird thing when you see it years and years later. What I'm talking about is they grow on nurse logs, or they grow on decomposing, decaying stuff.
The hemlocks do?
The hemlocks do.
They grow on logs?
Yes. And trees, and stumps, and rocks, and literally anything that has a pile of needles on it, they will grow in it.
Whoa.
Yeah. So are you familiar with the term nurse log?
I mean, we you and I have talked, I think, maybe very briefly about it in the context of, hey, this episode, we're going to talk about nurse logs. And I said, okay.
Okay. Sounds good.
But from the name, I'm assuming that the nurse log gives nourishment to other living things.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that like when I'm walking through the forest and I see a big ass downed log and there's like a bunch of mushrooms and moss and plants growing off of it?
That's exactly what a nurse log is.
Okay.
Now, we also use the term to be a little bit more specific towards nurse log for trees, because, you know, ferns and moss, they'll kind of grow on anything, just about anywhere.
Okay.
But very rarely do you have a tree that will grow specifically as like a niche habitat on these nurse logs and nurse stumps.
I see.
So essentially, for anyone who doesn't quite, you know, isn't quite familiar with the term, a nurse log is a living tree that grew up and then fell over, and then now it is just slowly but surely becoming a part of the forest.
Okay.
So it's essentially decaying. The thing is, though, it is packed full of water. And this is what makes it really unique, is that you have this tree that falls. It's a living tree day one, boom, day two, the thing's completely on the ground. It's laying on the soil, and it's now, because it's dying, because the tree is now transitioning to a different form, all of the defenses that that wood and the bark and everything had, they slowly just stop working. Just the same as anything that died, you know, it will start growing moss on it, because now it's not defending itself against these other organisms,
It will stop compartmentalizing. If you hit a gash in it, it'll just be there.
It'll just be there. And then not only that, but everything stops working. So it's a shell. It's just now an inert thing sitting there. So fungus immediately inoculates it. Okay. Almost like without, just the very first instant, there's going to be fungus that's growing on the bark. It's going to be coming from the soil, moving up into it, and it slowly starts to decompose the bark.
Wow.
Then it starts to get into the wood. And then over time, all of the lignin gets eaten. Then you have some of the cellulose gets eaten away. And then you slowly get these gaps, and you get like this really squishy kind of like decayed wood.
Yes,
you know?
Totally, yeah.
Now, that is just almost so sponge-like that you can actually pick it up and squeeze it and have water come from it.
Yeah.
So in terms of like a great habitat for something that, say, really likes water, something that really loves growing in a rainforest, it's a great habitat.
Is it better than the soil?
It is in some regards, meaning that it has a lot of water in it, and it usually is full of nutrients. The problem is it doesn't necessarily have like mineral nutrients that are really accessible.
Right.
So a Douglas fir, for instance, almost only will germinate from a seed on bare mineral soil, because it needs a little bit more, essentially, contact with the roots into the soil. So if you just like have a bunch of bark dust and you put a seed, it's not going to germinate. And if it does germinate, it's not going to survive, because it needs more soil resources right up next to its root.
Okay.
That means it can get more water. Hemlocks, though, they're a different story. They can grow in like the duff and the organic layer, the very top of the soil, and be happy as clams.
Wow.
So they don't need all that mineral soil. They can grow in the organic layer on top of that.
Wow.
So that is their kind of special niche. One of, because they'll also grow in mineral bare soil. They'll do just fine.
Yeah.
But if a seed from a hemlock lands in, let's say, on top of a big gigantic branch on a living tree, there's a Douglas fir, there's a big gigantic hemlock just next door, that Douglas fir has a branch that's 3 feet in diameter, because it's an old tree. That 3 foot in diameter bark has been catching, it's been growing moss because it's growing really slow on the top. Now it's 3 feet in diameter, so it's essentially flat on the top, right? Slowly curves away. So you get maybe some needles land on that moss. Maybe some other things land on there. Maybe you start to develop a little bit of soil on top of this branch on this gigantic living tree. Maybe not a lot of soil, but certainly a lot of like decaying plant matter.
Right. You read my mind, because when you said soil, I thought, well, by soil, do you mean like soil-like substance?
Yeah, exactly. Almost pre-soil would be the way I would describe
just
it.
Just decayed stuff.
It's just decayed stuff.
Okay.
Yeah. And a little hemlock seed will find itself growing on that branch in this little duff layer, and it will be like, poof, I'm alive, I'm growing, and it will send its roots into that area, not into the tree. They're not parasitic in that regard,
right?
But they will just grow on the side of that branch.
Wow.
Not only that, Alex, if there is a pocket in bark that has developed some amount of decayed stuff and a seed lands there, the hemlock will start growing literally on the side of that tree. And the roots, they don't grow, because this is a big misconception. People think that roots will grow to find something, like, oh, there's water over there, I'm going to grow over to the water.
Right.
They grow in the presence of these resources. So a hemlock will send its little root hairs down, and it will just follow all this line of resources. Maybe it's where there's a little bit of just the tiniest amount of something, and its roots will just follow that down. Now, if this is in a nurse log or on the side of a already living tree, you will end up finding over time, because every year this hemlock's getting bigger and bigger and bigger, mm-hmm. you'll find that this little teeny tiny root that at one point was the size of a hair is now getting lignified, getting bigger and bigger, and almost looks like an octopus just like suction to the side of this tree, with these big roots that go all the way down the side of the tree into the ground.
Wow.
I have pictures of this, and I will show you, and you're going to be like, oh my God. There are trees. I was just up in the Olympic Peninsula this last weekend, and there is a Western red cedar that's huge. It's like one of these old, massive 800-year-old trees that looks more dead than alive. And as you look up into it, your untrained eye, not you, just one's untrained eye, would be like, oh yeah, there's a bunch of nice branches. There's the tree. There's the needles. Okay, great. This is a big, beautiful tree. Kind of a little rustic, but okay, that's nice. Now, if you have a trained eye, you will actually see that this tree, this Western red cedar, actually has a little teeny tiny amount of living foliage way up at the very, very top. Mm. And the actual living stuff that you are seeing lower down are two and a half foot hemlock trees that are growing on the side of the base of the tree.
Wow.
As well as a couple other huckleberry species. These trees are huge. They're like, if you measure those trees, easily 12 to 20 inches in diameter, like on for the small one. And then it grows up, and it's literally just growing. It's the base of that tree where you would say now it has become roots. That is 15 feet up on the side of this other massiver tree.
I got some questions.
Yeah, throw them at me.
This doesn't seem too smart.
Oh, okay.
Right? Because if I grow on the side of another tree,
yeah.
I am at the will of whatever happens to that other tree.
That's fair.
If that tree falls,
you're probably falling with it.
I'm falling with it.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem like the brightest thing to do for a tree. Like,
that's fair.
You know, I guess maybe a tree can't tell. A tree isn't like a, you know.
Yeah, it's not going to be like, well, I wish I was somewhere else. Right. Yeah, they just have to grow wherever they grow, right?
Yeah, yeah. But like, that's startling to me. And also, it doesn't seem like it's that. Like, if you're a hemlock growing on a nurse log,
yeah,
doesn't seem like that's that stable. Like, maybe you get too heavy for the nurse log and it's like decayed out.
Well,
and so it collapses and suddenly you're on the ground.
That's the thing, actually. So they don't, that happens all the time.
Yeah.
And this is another fun thing that I'm going to send you or show. I have a bunch of pictures of this.
We'll put it on the Instagram.
I will post this. So this is called, people call them octopus trees.
Okay.
And so this is the second octopus reference that I'm making now.
Yeah.
You have a gigantic stump. You have a, you start getting this buildup of all this organic matter that's slowly decaying. That is a niche that can be filled, right? So the Western hemlock's like, sure, I can grow there. I'm going to grow there. And it, like a bunch of seeds land and you get a bunch of little teeny tiny trees. Each one of those trees, let's just say they all die except for one. That one that really succeeds and starts to grow up and puts its nice roots down, all that decayed material in that stump or that log, that is just easy to get through for the roots. It's basically just, you know, pre-soil, like we said.
Yeah.
So the roots will find their way down and keep growing, because roots grow down. That's what they do. They grow down until they start growing out. Now, if they start to try to grow out, they're essentially going to hit air, and then that kills them, because they're like, wow, now I'm exposed to air, and it basically dries them out. So then that basically prunes off that little hair.
Okay.
So they have another one that's kind of growing down, because there's still resources if they go down. So like, well, I'm just going to keep on following the resources.
It's a bit like a lightning strike, just follows the path of least resistance.
Exactly. And then slowly, naturally, the roots don't go outside of this log. And a lot of times they end up going around the outside, because that's where most things. If you have a log, it's going to decay from the outside in most of the time.
Okay.
At least generally, just because that's what's exposed to everything. So that's what gets decayed first.
Yeah.
So the outside is generally a little nicer. So the roots go all the way down until they hit the soil. When they hit the soil and they start to go down and out, they're like, oh, there's a bunch of room here. Then inevitably, they're going to find a fungal associate. They're going to hang out with that. That fungal associate is going to be connected to other hemlocks around. Those roots, are they going to find those other hemlock roots? They're going to connect. They're going to graft together. Now you're connected to the network. Then each one of those roots is going to get stronger and bigger and bigger and bigger until all of a sudden those little root hairs are now the size of your arm, the size of your leg, the size of your torso. Now you have these big, gigantic roots holding up an otherwise completely normal straight tree.
Okay.
And then the whole stump over this time period slowly decays away, and you get literally a tree growing on stilts with a perfectly straight stem growing straight out of it.
So there's just a learning curve for being one of these trees on a nursery. You have to get past that first 6 months.
Yep.
And once you have your roots in the ground and they're nice and thick and you're feeling good, you're feeling stable.
Yeah.
You just go for it, and you don't have to worry about the nurse log anymore.
Exactly. And you can, if you walk around any of these of our forests over here, and this also happens in other places, especially tropical places, but it's not super common, not as common in other parts of the world, or at least in other non-really rainforest-like places, because the organic layer and the decay of that log creates such beautiful like habitat for very specific species. You see it mostly over here, or rather, if you go out into the forest, you can find it in an instant. If it's even a remotely old growth kind of forest, it'll be everywhere.
Yeah.
And you'll see that it's exactly right, Alex, where once that decays away, there's like trees that are growing. You could walk underneath, you could walk in. There's a state park, I think it's Beverly Beach State Park here on the coast in Oregon, that has a bunch of these trees all over the place, and everyone goes to see these big, gigantic trees.
Wow.
Yeah, so you just, once they get their roots in, they're solid, and then it doesn't matter what happens to that the shell that they started growing on to begin with. But you are also right, if it does, if the log like rolls over for some reason, usually it doesn't, because it's kind of like, have you seen old pictures of the Titanic now, like underneath water for 100 and some years?
Right. How like the bottom half of it is covered in sediment.
Yeah. And so it's just, you're not going to imagine that's just going to randomly like tip over, you know. This is, the log has become a part of the soil. In the photos that we'll post, you'll see very clearly like, wait, where's the log? It's like, that is the log.
Right.
It's just so covered in moss and ferns and huckleberries and all these other little herbs and things.
Yeah, I bet the bottom of that log is basically like, you know, like where the beef hits the bottom bun. It's just like a mush.
It's just all together. One thing where the beef hits the bun. That's exactly what this is. But yeah, so this is, so what I just think is so cool is that is the classic formation of soil. And if you walk through a forest, Alex, you can see nurse logs from, it just fell and there's some moss on it. Just a little bit of moss, and you'll see 100 little teeny tiny hemlocks. I have a picture of bark of a Douglas fir, I think it was, and there's holes in the bark from maybe where a woodpecker went in some years ago when the tree was still standing.
Mm-hmm.
The tree fell over. Now from each one of those holes is like a 2-inch tall little seedling of a little tiny hemlock. So the hemlock, they just, they are the quintessential nurse log growing trees. They'll become nurse logs for sure if they fall over. But a nurse log is something that we actually used to take out of the forest. Like, oh, there's logs everywhere. Let's clean up the forest floor a little bit.
Right.
And now people are like, no, you need to leave those because they're repositories for water.
Mm-hmm.
They are actively creating soil and habitat. Some salamanders live within the decaying logs and stumps around. That's their habitat. That's what they do.
Certainly plenty of insects.
Oh, plenty of insects. And obviously fungi is, you know, a huge component of this whole thing.
Man, if you're a fungal associate and a nurse log lands right next to you, it's dinner time,
it's
baby.
It's business time.
Yeah, that's got to be like hitting the jackpot.
Yeah, it's exactly what it is. And it's just, they're so beautiful, Alex. Like, I want everyone to Google them right now, because if you can find a bunch of really beautiful photos. And I have an idea to count the species that I find, but they change depending on where you're at. But man, there's just like six different kinds. Six. Did I say six?
You did.
Sorry. Six different kinds of ferns and a bunch of huckleberries and violet. And then you get hemlock, you get western red cedar. Those are the two trees that really do it around here.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you, this thing, you just won't find Douglas fir very often. Every now and then, maybe sycamore spruce, pine trees don't do it.
These photos are exquisitely magical looking.
They are, right?
It's like that's kind of a classic like fantasy look.
It totally is.
These nurse logs with a bunch of shit growing on it.
And you know what, Alex? It really makes me. It drives home, I think, the idea of what a rainforest is. Because you come out here. One of my friends, before I even went to Massachusetts, before it was not even an idea. We were in Oregon. He was like, the biggest difference between Oregon and Massachusetts is all the moss. Everything out here is covered in moss.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, well, yeah, I mean, we're a rainforest. That makes total sense. I'm really glad that you actually noticed that, because I didn't notice it. I took it for granted. Mm-hmm. You go elsewhere, there's not near as much.
Interesting. Moss, I love moss.
Yeah. Anyway, so nurse logs. They are a really super important part of this. And you know how you can tell, X, if a nurse log was somewhere, other than if you have this tree that's growing on a stump and you can see that sort of thing.
Yeah.
If there's a nurse log that falls, the log that fell was perfectly straight, more or less, right? So if you have a bunch of trees that grow on it, maybe you have 100 little individuals, they all jockey for the best position, they all kind of outcompete each other, mm-hmm. and then maybe 50, 60 years later, you will have a perfectly straight line of maybe six trees.
Oh.
You're like, why are these trees just like strangely in a perfectly long row for like 80 feet? That's because there was a 80-foot long tree. Maybe 80 feet, it's kind of hard to tell if a tree is straight, but certainly for 20 or 30 feet, you can sometimes find these like doot, 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 doot trees that are right in a perfect straight line because each one of them grew on a different section of this old nurse log.
That's clever.
Yeah.
I love that.
That's the western hemlock, famous for just growing wherever it is landed. I have some photos, Alex. Sorry. I know, I just have to add this one thing.
Okay.
Remember when I said an octopus, where it looks like an octopus is like suctioned onto the side of something?
Yes.
I have a photo that I believe it looks exactly like that. You can't even really see where the leaves or where the roots grow down.
Mm-hmm.
It just looks like someone took a little like splat thing and just went blah, on the side of a tree, and then a new tree grew up from it.
Wow.
I just think it's the funniest thing.
It's amazing.
So octopusy.
Well, Casey, with that, let's get into our review of the western hemlock.
Let's do it.
We're going to give our final thoughts on this tree and then give it a rating of 0 to 10 golden cones of honor. And as our resident expert, we will begin with you.
Okay. All right. So here's the thing. I love the hemlock. I think it's so beautiful. However, I think it's a tree that doesn't really get, what is it? It doesn't kind of, I don't want to put this. I think climax species is great, but it's a little bit, I mean, we described it earlier as like a stoner kind of tree.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. That's fine. I can get on board with that. The one thing I'm just kind of like against is that I feel like when you get a climax tree, it's like, this is the creme de la creme. This is the top of the pyramid. But these trees are so just kind of weak. Like they don't really compartmentalize very well.
Oh.
They get fungus that other trees don't get. And it's kind of like, it's kind of like, oh, you're the big, like big, it's kind of like a king. Let's take a king, for example.
Okay.
Like a historic king where you have like the fighting kings, you know, like
right.
of lore.
The it's warrior
like,
king.
Yeah, exactly. Then you get the kings where it's like, you know, you hit them with a pencil and they're just like, ah!
I mean, if we're talking,
like, oh, God.
If we're talking Game of Thrones, you're speaking about a Robert Baratheon versus a Joffrey.
Easily. Yeah. They think they're the shit and they are just so pathetic.
So
yeah.
Hemlocks or Joffrey?
I don't want to say Joffrey. I want to say more like the God King Xerxes.
Okay.
Where, you know, you get everyone has told you you're a God King.
I see.
You are the climax species. Hail be the hemlock.
Mm-hmm.
Nah. It's just, you know what? They'll live for a little while, but man, a Douglas fir is so much more robust. I'll take the brutish Douglas fir any day over the week. However, I do love the featheriness of it. One of my top favorite cones. So I'm gonna give it a.
Oh my God.
I'm going to give it a 7.8. Yeah, it still seems high, but it's a conifer. You know, it gets like 5 just for being itself.
I see. 7.8 Golden Cones of Honor from Casey Clapp.
A little overrated everywhere else, though.
For the Western Hemlock.
There it is.
All right.
What do you got?
Here's the deal.
Mm-hmm.
I love me a Western Hemlock.
Yeah, you love the cones.
Love the cones. Love the needles or the needle-length leaves.
Yeah.
I love the shape of them. I love that they are just like, you know, in the way that the tree of heaven is covered in these trash bags full of seeds.
Yeah.
The Western hemlocks are kind of covered in trash bags full of cones. Yeah, they just really go for it.
Yeah. Okay. I really like the trash bag metaphors here.
Yeah. I love the nurse log thing. I like a tree that's industrious and can kind of just grow wherever.
Mm-hmm. But you also said it's kind of reckless, and I kind of like the idea of a reckless, yeah, where you're walking through the forest and you're like, hemlocks, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Get down from there.
That's a little live fast, die young of the, yeah, hemlock.
Yeah, it is.
Which I think is pretty hardcore and cool.
Yeah, I guess that's true. That's why they got droopy tops.
Yeah. So I'm going to go a little higher than you, Casey, because I don't have this, you know, this undercurrent of but.
Sorry, yeah.
Which is fine. That's your cones are your own. I'm giving this thing an 8.7.
8.7.
Yeah, I regard this tree quite highly.
Yeah, I think that's reasonable. That's a reasonable regardation.
Yes, thank you.
Regardment.
Well, that was our review of the Western hemlock. A fine tree.
A fine tree in every definition of the word fine.
That's right. And Casey, speaking of fine, we're about to play a fine new game.
A new game, Alex.
That's right. It does not have a theme song, but it does have a title. We are calling this game The Cone Scale. Here's how the cone scale works, Casey. In front of me, I have a scale. The scale that we use to ship packages from our merch store.
We hope it works.
And that I'm going to use to make bread. So on this scale, I'm going to turn it on.
Okay.
And we are going to place different cones from my cone collection, okay, onto the scale.
All right.
You and I will place bets, Price is Right style, on, okay, how many grams we think the cone will weigh.
Oh, my God.
We have to do it in grams.
A gram?
Yeah.
I don't even have a conception of a gram.
We're about to.
Oh, God.
So I've got varying sizes of cones here. I chose gram because if we do ounces, they're all going to be like 0.1 ounces.
Oh, I see.
And also, then the game won't be fun.
Yeah, I think grams also is more universal.
Yeah, it's, yeah, more international.
Okay. Ooh, okay. All,
okay,
right.
Casey. So here, we have about 5 or 6 cones here. We're going to start with this guy.
Okay.
So what is this, Casey? This is a spruce cone of some,
yep,
kind.
Yep, that looks like a blue spruce from the Colorado's version.
All right, a blue spruce is about 4 inches tall.
Okay.
About an inch in diameter. And I'm going to say, I don't know, just for a start.
Yeah. You know what? Toss that over. Can I hold it in my hand?
Sure.
Can,
yeah,
I tell you that? Okay. Okay.
I'm going to say 50 grams.
50 grams.
Yeah.
Now, could you give me an example of a gram? You know, you don't have to tell me how it is or what it is. And I guess now this might be too cheaty. I just want to know, I want a conception so I can say, well, a silver spoon weighs 20 grams, Casey.
Well,
you know
what I mean? I'll do this for you, Casey. There is a website. I forgot this part of the game.
Okay.
TheMeasureOfThings.com.
Ah.
You can type in how heavy is and then a measurement, and it'll give you a list of objects that weigh that amount.
Oh, gosh. Okay, yeah.
So here's a couple things, yeah, that weigh 1 gram.
Okay.
About 0.9 grams. Is a jelly bean.
A jelly bean is, okay, all right. That's
so that's
tiny.
About a gram.
That's a gram. Okay,
yeah.
All right. All
and
right.
That's as much as I'm going to give you. I don't want to give you more.
All right, cool. Could you, okay, give me something that weighs 100 grams.
No.
Oh.
So this, I'm going to say 45 grams.
45 grams. Okay, this is for a normal sized
blue spruce
Colorado
cone.
Blue spruce cone. I'm going to say 22. 22? Yeah.
Okay, and I say 45?
Yeah.
Let's put it on the cone scale. Casey,
what?
We are both over. This weighs 16 grams.
16 grams?
Yeah. About 16 grams, a compact disc, a CD.
I've heard of those.
Maybe a AAA battery is about 16 grams.
AAA. Wow. Grams, I don't understand them.
Next we have
16.
A shore pine.
Yes.
It is about 1.5 inches tall, mm-hmm, about, mm-hmm, 1 inch in width.
Okay. What do you think, listeners?
I don't know about that, Casey.
nobody texted me.
Well, Casey, what do you think about this
Give
one?
Give me the shore pine.
The shore pine.
All right, so it's much smaller, but it's a little bit denser. I'm going to go 10.
All right,
grams.
I'm saying 8.
8? Okay, mm-hmm. Undercut me again.
Here we go. The shore pine is going on the cone scale.
Goo.
This cone weighs 5 grams.
You're kidding me.
We both overshot again, Case.
Dang it. All right. So we're never going to go spin that big wheel.
No. Maybe this next one. We're getting better, though.
All right. I just want the living room set, Alex.
Next, your favorite cone, Casey.
Ooh.
The Metasequoia glyptostriboides.
That's the one.
In common. This is a Dawn Redwood cone. Mm-hmm. It's an itty bitty guy, about half an inch tall, about half an inch thick.
Yep. It's going to be my next tattoo.
What do you think, Casey? How many grams does this weigh?
1.
1 gram?
1 gram, Alex.
I'm also going to say 1 gram.
Okay.
Here we go. The Metasequoia glyptostriboides is going on the cone scale. Oh my God.
Is it 1?
2 grams.
You're kidding me. That thing's 2 grams?
Well, we each got a point, Case.
All right, we get a point. All right, so we're tied now.
And look at, let's look up some things that weigh 2 grams. A playing card.
1 playing card.
Yeah.
Okay, wow.
A penny. Very light cone. Next, Casey, we have a quite large Douglas fir
that
cone.
That is, but not a big Douglas fir cone, just a normal-sized Douglas fir, not a big cone Douglas fir is what I'm saying.
I see. Yeah. Yes, this is a normal Douglas fir cone. It is, however, quite large.
Yeah, I'm trying to gauge this.
It's about 3.5 inches tall,
yeah,
about 1.5 inches wide. Yeah. Just a gorgeous work of art.
It really
I love
is
this
truly
cone.
Beautiful.
What do you think, Casey? How many grams do you think this weighs?
So that one's 16. That one was less. I'm going to say this one's 14 grams.
Okay. I'm going to say 17 grams.
17? You think it's more than the spruce?
Yeah. Wow. Let's see. Let's go on the cone scale. Casey.
Yes, come on.
21 grams.
You are kidding me. That thing is more dense than that the spruce cone?
It apparently is.
I'm stunned. Did you tear everything out here? Did you check the scale?
Oh, I've been tearing, yeah.
All right.
1 point to me, although I don't think we've been keeping track.
Yeah, we have. Now you have 2, I have 1. We've both been over on the other ones.
Thank you for keeping track.
Oh, I can't believe that. 22?
21 grams.
21 grams?
And things that are 21 grams, a mouse.
A mouse. That weighs as much as a mouse?
A AA battery.
Oh, those are bigger.
Okay, so we have 2 more.
Okay. Oh my God.
Here I have the largest cone in my collection, a gift from you.
Huge.
A Coulter Pine cone.
I love it.
It is maybe 9 inches tall.
Yeah,
5 or 6 inches wide.
Yep.
It's a behemoth. It's pokey.
Yeah.
It's covered in sap.
It'll kill you if it lands on your head.
Yeah. The scales are thick as shit.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think? How much does this Coulter Pine weigh?
Can we just go straight to pounds on this?
No, this has to be grams.
I can't do. How many grams does this thing go? I hope this is not going to crush your scale. Okay, so it's obviously like exponentially heavier. This 2,000 grams.
2,000 grams.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going a little lower.
Mm.
I'm gonna say like 500, like 550 grams.
550? Oh yeah, you're just going for points now. I see the game you're playing.
2,000 grams?
Yeah, look at that thing.
All right,
here we go.
It's going on the cone scale.
Don't drop it though.
859 grams.
No way. I was so wrong.
Yeah, that felt like an overguess.
I'm so bad at this.
Oh shush.
You're crushing me right now.
So things that weigh 858 grams.
A small child's head.
A liter of water.
Oh, okay. All right.
A basketball.
Oh, that weighs as much as a basketball?
And a human brain.
Oh, my God. That's a human brain-sized cone.
Casey, our last one here.
Okay.
Is the indomitable.
Ooh.
The precious.
It's so adorable.
The topical Western hemlock.
That's the one. Okay. All right.
How much does this Western hemlock weigh? This is about... a half an inch tall, half an inch thick.
Yep. Very feathery, very gorgeous,
very
hemlock.
Very, very light.
1 gram, Alex.
I will also be saying 1 gram.
I hope that we are both wrong.
It's going on the cone scale. 0 grams.
No, it's floating.
It doesn't even register on the scale.
Oh my God. I can't believe that. Look up what weighs 0 grams.
I've got something that weighs 0 grams.
Yeah.
If you took everybody who enjoyed this segment and put them on a scale.
There you go. Thanks everyone.
Yeah. Thanks for listening, guys. That was the cone scale. Casey, it's time for our completely arbitrary Q&A. This week, our question is from Kelsey from Manitoba.
Manitoba, my favorite province.
Wonderful. Hi, Kelsey. Hi, Casey and Alex. My husband and I have been enjoying your podcast. Love the new funky theme song, by the way.
Aha, word.
There's the validation I needed,
That's
Casey.
That's what I'm talking about.
I was looking at my apple tree planted next to my crab apple tree, and I wondered, what is the difference between crab apple and eating apples?
Mm-hmm.
And eating apples.
Yeah.
How are they related? Were eating apples bred from crab apples? Thanks, Kelsey.
Ah.
Kelsey, thank you for the wonderful question about apples, which Casey is extremely passionate about. Casey, difference between crab apple and an apple that we may eat?
All right, Kelsey, thanks for the great question. This is fun because it is an easy answer. The difference is there are no differences except for the size. Little apples we call crab apples. Big apples we call apples.
Wow.
That's it. That's officially it. Thanks, Kelsey. Talk to you next week, Alex.
Wait, so if a crab apple keeps growing, will it become an apple?
Well, that's the thing. So the big apples that we eat, our eating apples, those are bred to be big, juicy, full of apple.
But
apples.
Real, true-to-nature apples yeah. are the size of crab apples?
They're usually even smaller.
Wow. Because they're bitter as shit. They yeah, taste terrible.
Exactly. But they were not evolved for us humans. They evolved for birds and small mammals and things like that
right.
to eat the whole thing as one big thing. And then defecate, poop out all those seeds somewhere else, and now you got a new apple tree growing.
Fascinating.
So we started growing them bigger because we were like, well, we got to eat these apples, and we find them to be much more satisfying because A, we can breed them to be sweeter, mm-hmm. and B, everyone wants bigger stuff. You know, you want big fruit. For better or worse, but in this case, they ended up just breeding big apples that had good flavor, and those are the ones we eat. Well, I mean, apples with flavor. I don't want to say so much as good. I mean, have you ever had a Red Delicious? Come on. What's the point in that?
I don't mind an apple.
Yeah, it's like you have to peel off the outside of a Red Delicious because it's like you get this waxy like coating and it like sticks in your teeth, and you're like, why did I do this?
Well, the waxy coating is literally corn wax.
But anyway, so we used to, like, whenever we would make cider apples were always the little teeny tiny ones. So okay. Like Johnny Appleseed, another like reference that guy again. He would just throw seeds of apples out. Whatever grew, he would then take seeds from that one and then throw them out. New apples would grow up and they would be these little teeny tiny awful, no one wants to eat them, crab apples. They still have juice in them. So you smash down that juice, you ferment it, and you get yourself cider.
Okay.
But you don't really care if it's like super sour cider or anything else. You're just like, oh, I've got a bunch of cider. I'm going to drink it. It's great. But yeah, that's the end of it, is that they're just the same exact apple, botanically, same exact thing. They got five seeds in it, they got their, what's the papery thing in the middle that I'm thinking of, the ovary?
Oh yeah.
What do they call it? The core, just the core of the apple.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Yeah, except they just bred them to be tastier and bigger.
There
and
you have it.
Destroy the tree because they grow too big and they are delicious, and I don't want to talk about it.
Well, I don't want to get you started on that.
All right, but that's a great question.
Yes, thank you so much, Kelsey, for your question. And if you have a question about trees, email us at arbitrarypod@gmail.com. Join us on Instagram at arbitrarypod. That's ArbitraryPod pod. You can join our Patreon to support the podcast for $1, $5, or $10 a month. You can join the Arboretum and get two episodes, extra episodes a month, or the Cone of the Month Club. Every month you get a cute little cone sticker from a different artist. It's a lot of fun. There's also a Facebook group. Casey, have you dabbled in the Facebook group at
all? I haven't got there yet. I think I tried to find it and I couldn't find it.
It's called Completely Arbitrary Fungal Associates. And there's, as of today that we are recording this, as of a week ago, there is a Discord channel.
Oh.
The Completely Arbitrary Fungal Associates. So search for those things. We're very excited that our fungal associates are just taking that stuff into their hands and making it happen.
I believe this is the evolution of a fungus.
Yes.
Of fungi. Of fungus or fungi.
We are officially associates.
Yeah, we're associates of associates.
Wow.
Oh, this is so much fun, you guys.
Casey.
Yeah?
We've come to the end of this episode of Completely Arbitrary.
Done it.
Well done, my friend.
I'm going to go find a nurse log and just hang out.
Hey, that sounds like a good idea.
You're so soft.
Just octopus splat yourself on the side. Thank you so much for listening to Completely Arbitrary. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
See ya. Completely Arbitrary is produced by Alex Croson and Casey Clapp.
Our artwork is by Jillian Barthold, and our music is by Abes and the Mini Vandals.
And you can support the podcast at patreon.com/arbitrarypod.
And find additional readings at completelyarbitrary.com. Thanks for listening.